Prescriptions for Health with Dr. Len and Vicky Saputo, Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, August 15th, 2011. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicky Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And please note that our shows will also be archived on DrSaputo.com.
And today you're going to hear Vicky's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 20 to the hour. And we've got another great show for you today that's going to include Congress wants us to relax FDA rules so that their drug advisors can have financial conflicts of interest, and we're supposed to sit back and go, oh, goody.
And what healthy fat can lower anxiety as well as inflammation, and why it's so important.
And what mineral can shorten the duration of a cold.
And the importance of eating family meals together, and much more. Also, if you want to join in our conversation and you have questions about our topics, give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We have lots of eights.
We do. Lucky eights, huh?
Crazy eights.
Crazy eights. There you go.
You know, the FDA says that they need advisors with conflicts of interest because it's too hard to find knowledgeable advisors without a conflict of interest regarding drugs.
Give me a break.
The pharmaceutical industry wants the drugs approved faster, and Big Pharma gives money to the FDA, and the FDA likes that.
It's about a third of their budget. Can you believe that? There's nothing like the fox in the chicken coop protecting the chickens.
Yeah, so Congress is agreeing to relax the FDA rules regarding advisors with these financial conflicts of interest that review a drug. This whole thing is just absolutely crazy.
I mean, you have to be stupid to want to give the FDA more power to become further corrupt. I mean, the corruption of the FDA is unbelievable as it is, because they're supposed to be protecting us, and there's so many examples of when they haven't that have become public knowledge, and we become outraged about it as a public, but what do we do about it to take action? And here we go now. They have the courage, okay, the chutzpah, whatever you want to call it, to come out and say, well, you know, we have to have people who know the topic the best, and if there's a little conflict of interest, it's a bit more than there is now. We shouldn't worry about that.
Well, this is all business. This isn't about new drug safety.
Well, that's for sure.
Because Congress has been purchased by Big Pharma. I mean, if you think about it, they get about $1 million apiece each year.
Well, it's not every year, but the Congress got in the year 2009.
Oh, so
2008,
1 year they did.
Big Pharma spent $500 million just at around the time of the election to try and get Congress to support their whatever their particular financial needs were, which means that each congressperson got an average of almost $1 million. Then you wonder why there wasn't any health care reform?
And now, and this is why we're fast-tracking these drugs. It's for favors.
Well, sure. The sooner they get a drug on the market, the sooner they make profit, and the less they have to test it. And so they're supposed to do post-surveillance studies on this after it's been marketed, and they don't. And so the FDA fines them a couple of million dollars, but what do they care? A couple of million dollars in a multi-billion dollar budget is nothing. It's pocket change.
You know, research even shows that even just small gifts, even if it wasn't $1 million a piece, you know, influence how people vote.
Look, I think it's fine to have people who have a conflict of interest working for the FDA. I think that's fine. What's not fine is to give
vote.
Them a vote. They absolutely should not have a vote. Let's get information from them. We want to be scientific about this. Listen. We want their information. We want to look at it. We want to scrutinize it. We want to be sure that it's exactly telling us everything we need to know about a drug. But we sure as hell don't want to give them a vote because we know how they vote. They have a track record.
Isn't that what happened with Vioxx and
Celebrex? You know, when Vioxx was taken off the market in 2004, that was a big deal, and it showed all kinds of corruption from everybody. It was bizarre. Of course, they made about $20 billion on the drug. And after Vioxx was off the market, they had another committee look at it to try and bring it back on the market. And in that group of about 30 people, this FDA committee, they included 10 people who were from Big Pharma, and they gave them a vote. It damn near passed because all 10 of the people working for Big Pharma did what? They voted to bring it back on the market. Can you imagine somebody going to, back to work on Monday if they were employed by the Vioxx people and say, well, I did what was right, and I voted against Vioxx, and aren't you happy? I sort of like, well, you've been fired, son.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened with Celebrex, except it happened too late. Because Celebrex, in my opinion, is no different or any safer than Vioxx is. It's got way too many side effects. And that goes for every other single non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug that's out there. Because let's face it, we've got 30 to 40,000 deaths every year caused by this family of drugs. And about 300,000 hospitalizations. And for some reason, that seems to be okay. We lose 10,000 people in Iraq. And everybody's up in arms and says, we can't have that. We've got to go kill the Al-Qaeda and all the other, you know, it's for 10,000 people. Well, this is 30 times that. Don't you think that should register a little bit? Do you really want to take a drug like this that doesn't have that much in the way of beneficial effects? Yes, it relieves pain, but guess what? There are many other pain relievers that work equally well or better that don't have the side effects of heart attacks, strokes, kidney failure, GI perforations, GI bleeds. I mean, isn't that sort of like a little clue that we should be restricting drugs like that and not even having them on the market?
Well, see, Congress wants to approve more medications, and they said that it's to promote more jobs. But what they're doing is that they're just killing more people. And then they talk about that they want drugs for these rare diseases because those could be fast-tracked in. In other words, they'd approve them faster because maybe they might save somebody's life. But then they say that they hope that the FDA is going to limit the experts with the conflict of interest to fast-track drug rare diseases. And to me, just saying hope is kind of scary because they're going to, like, pass this.
Look,
and they're just hoping it's only going to be approving the drug for rare diseases. We already know that drugs can be approved for other
off-label uses.
Off-label uses.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, you make such a good point, Vicki. I mean, we should be paying attention to these kinds of things. What we need is a Congress that's not corrupt because they are the real problem. They are influenced by corporate America and specifically by the money people of Big Pharma and the insurance industry and the research industry, et cetera, et cetera.
Big business.
And they kowtow to where the money is. So they're easy to purchase. I mean, for a mere $500 million in a $2.5 trillion budget, they got their way. Talk about a bargain. That was the deal of the century. And we went along with it. And Congress should be ashamed of itself. They don't represent the people. They represent corporate America. They represent the money. They're worried about being reelected. I think that we need to clean house, but that's not going to be enough either.
And they have their own insurance plans.
Well, they get everything that they want because they can pass legislation.
They're not voting for themselves, so that doesn't even make any sense.
No. So we talk about Congress relaxing FDA rules to make the conflict of interest even more available. We got to talk about this. We need to call our congresspeople and tell them that we're not going to put up with that. We're sure as hell not going to vote for them a second time if it turns out that they just stand by. And again, I have no problem with the FDA saying, well, we can't get enough people to give us good information. Hogwash. Bring these people in. Have them be on the committee. Have them give all the information
they
can.
But not vote.
But no voting, because we know that they're not reliable. They're not responsible. They'll do whatever it takes, whether there's a conflict of interest or not, to preserve their own hides. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888 if you have a question about your health or a comment about what we're talking about.
Well, you know, too, also, then there are these altered drug company studies that can include more than the drug companies themselves in manipulating the results and faking documents to get the desired results. So tell us about this other step in drug approval and how they have this conflict of interest.
You want to talk about corrupt. I mean, you don't have to look very much longer or much farther than the pharmaceutical industry. Here's something that's published. It says FDA finds U.S. drug research film faked documents.
Firm, not film, firm.
Yeah, firm, faked documents. So we have this Cetero Research Organization that was found faking documents and manipulating samples, and they're talking about 1,900 instances where this happens between April of 2005 and June of 2009. And laboratory techs working at this place who were identified as conducting a lot of the studies that were being done weren't actually even present at the facilities at the time the research is being done. Do you think maybe they fabricated something? Well, that's what they're saying. And, of course, that's like, I mean, how bad can it get? I'm almost speechless when I think about we're allowing something like that to happen. We know what's happening. And then we complain about it, but we go back to business as usual the very next day.
What can we do besides complain about it?
Well, we can call congresspeople, which doesn't do a lot of good, but we can threaten them. We can publicize this stuff. We can do shows like this. But what we really have to do is we have to evolve as a culture, as a human species, to a higher level of consciousness where we become more interested in serving rather than in getting. We're too much in the narcissistic place of wanting to have all the things that we can have that are materialistic that make us feel good, rather than trying to help the other person to feel good. You know, love, if you want to, which is what this is about, isn't about making yourself feel good. It's not about you feeling better. It's about you wanting somebody else to be happy. That's what service is about, and that's what should be done when it comes to things like this. We should want to give service. Until we evolve to that point in time, all we're doing is rearranging the chairs on the deck of a sinking Titanic. We have to take some kind of action that has teeth in it, that shows the example. It's not about disclosing all these terrible things and then going, oh, boy, these people are terrible.
Well, it comes from ethics. People need to have ethics and morals and not be bought out and making money the most important thing in the world. Because,
exactly.
You know, and a lot of this is around power, too. It's everybody yeah. wants to be the most powerful and the most important. And if they have the most money, then they're going to be famous or something.
Well, they'll be famous or something. You got that part right.
But there are plenty of famous people like Gandhi that care about people and humanity.
Yeah. Well, there definitely are. There are a lot of people alive today.
Mother Teresa.
Whose goal is to do things like that. And I think that's what we should be focusing our attention on. We should be leading by inspiration, not by legislation. We shouldn't have to be passing laws that say, if you do this, we'll punish you for that. What we should be doing is inspiring people to say, I want to be like that person.
Yes.
I want to do a good thing. I want to set a right example. I want to make the world a better place, and I'm going to provide service. I'm going to live a life that is about giving service. Now, how do you teach that? That's by example. So you have to make the change one at a time, one person at a time, and say, I'm going to be the best person I can be. Yeah, be a Marine, right? Be the best you can be. Big joke in that one.
Not better than you, but just the best that I can be.
Best that I can be, absolutely. And if we do that, things will change. And every time somebody joins you, you're removing somebody from the other side who basically is saying, I'm more concerned with myself than I am about you. And if that grows to become a majority, now you have a new cultural norm that's actually spectacular. And it's within our grasp. But it's like that butterfly wing in Japan that causes tsunami someplace else because of how things start with something small. It's like a single thought is what creates a new evolutionary pattern in humanity. All these things are real, and it starts with one person, and it seems like it's nothing. And relative to the rest, it's small, but it's something.
Well, it's also like you can't make somebody love you. You can't say, you have to love me.
No.
But if you're loving, then maybe they'll love you.
It'll come back. And it's not that you're doing it with the idea that it's going to come back. You're doing it with the idea that you want someone else to feel good.
Because you love them.
That's what love is about. Too often we're, oh, I feel so good when I'm with you. That's about you. That's not about them. That's what real love is about. The lines are open. The number is 41, used to be. The number is 888-874-4888. If you have a question about your health or about what we're talking about, give us a call.
You know, we all know that omega-3 fatty acids like fish oil and flaxseed oil and hemp seed oil and chia seeds are healthy. And here's a study that shows that increased anxiety is a symptom of omega-3 fatty acid deficiency.
Wow.
Now, is there a connection between anxiety and inflammation?
Absolutely. And that's what they showed here. They studied a bunch of medical students who are anxious to begin with because they've got so much pressure on them to be learning so many things in their life. And what they did is they treated some of them with omega-3 fatty acids, and they had a control group that they didn't. Then they looked at their level of anxiety, and they also looked at some of the levels of inflammatory markers like interleukin-6, which is a marker that tells you your body's in an inflamed state. And what they found in just a few months was that there was about a 20% reduction in anxiety scores and a 14% reduction in the interleukin-6 production. That tells you a lot about these anti-inflammatory essential fatty acids that are absolutely essential for good health. And the sad part about this is that 95% of the population, according to three studies done by the USDA on nutritional deficiencies on tens of thousands of people, showed that 95% are deficient in omega-3 and 6 essential fatty acids. That's a staggering thing. So just by taking a supplement of an essential fatty acid every day, you can reduce your risk for developing anxiety that's related to inflammatory changes in the body. And it also helps with other things like depression. We know that large doses of fish oil have been a treatment for depression for a long time. So here's a nutritional approach, you know, like Hippocrates said, let medicine be your food, let food be your medicine. That's a natural, easy, straightforward way to provide people with what they need to be healthy. If you have nutritional deficiencies, you can't make the products you need. It's just that simple. It's like trying to make a car and not having spark plugs or a cylinder or some kind of brake liner. A car's not going to work. The human body's no different. You don't have the raw materials, can't make the products. And that has biochemical and physiological effects that are profound.
And we also know that chronic inflammation is linked to things like cardiovascular disease and strokes and rheumatoid arthritis.
Diseases.
And also other benefits of omega-3 fatty acids are
right.
It can help arrhythmias mm-hmm. instead of using
aspirin
for clots. Mm-hmm. And it can prevent the clots because of
the EPA is in it. It's an anticoagulant.
Yeah, and those can cause heart attacks and strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And they feed the brain and the heart, and
mm-hmm.
they give us healthy membranes, and they're good for fetuses of pregnant mothers. And these are really important things. Now, something that just came out to take advantage of the fact that a lot of our fish supply has been being contaminated, like from the BP Gulf oil spill and from the Fukushima mm-hmm. Nuclear disaster mm-hmm. and all that kind of thing. Well, Monsanto has now developed a new genetically modified soybean that artificially produces a type of an omega-3 fatty acid, and the FDA is expected to approve this frankenbean.
Well,
and you know, they've only studied it for 16 weeks. And
isn't that long enough?
They haven't studied it for long-term effects, but they're approving it to be put in processed foods. So we already know that it's not healthy to eat soybeans, for one thing, especially if they're not organic, because then they're all genetically modified so that they can withstand a lot more pesticides without killing the plants. So they're going to be putting omega-3 fake fish oil in a variety of foods, like things like baked goods and breakfast cereals and other fish products and frozen dairy desserts and cheeses and grains and pastas and gravies and nuts,
right,
and poultry and fruit
in
juices
everything.
And vegetable products and soups. It's going to be in everything.
Well, you're right. Now, is this necessarily a bad thing? We don't know. It is an essential fatty acid, an omega-3 fat.
and that's something that at least sounds like it might be okay. But for God's sakes, before you put it in the water, basically, and give it to everybody, there ought to be a little bit more testing. And we'll find out more about that as we do this clinical experiment on us.
And we've got these Frankenfish, and now we're going to need new mechanical nanotech and body parts to deal with these fake foods.
All right. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. Give us a call if you have a question about your health or want to participate in our conversation. And we'll be right back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Have a great line that was in a recent editorial of the Idaho Statesman. It says, witnessing the Republicans and the Democrats bicker over the U.S. debt is analogous.
Yeah, it's one of those funny words.
Anyway, it's like watching two drunks argue over a bar bill.
Now you got it.
On the Titanic.
That's easier to pronounce. Okay.
And anyway, I have some favorite quotes from one of our listeners, Mike, that are food for thought. And one of them is, you know, you were just mentioning before the break about inspiring.
Inspiration.
Uh-huh.
Rather than legislation.
Well, anyway, this is aspire to inspire before you expire.
All right.
And getting older is the only way to live longer.
That's true.
Nothing passes by as quickly as years, which is really the truth. The trouble with this is by Doug Larson. The trouble with class reunions is that old flames have become even older.
Right.
There's a small child inside each one of us, and things you must do every day are smile and laugh.
Indeed.
And Charlie Schultz says, just remember, once you're over the hill, you begin to pick up speed. Don't count the days. Make the days count.
Very good.
And then from Havana, Lena Olin, who was playing the role of Bobby Duran, said, were you waiting for me? And Robert Redford says, all my life.
Wow.
And I thought, isn't that like the most romantic thing you could ever hear?
Oh, that's cool. Little tidbits for a little pleasure. Well, thanks for that, Vicki. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, now we're going to talk about something that we've all experienced, and that's the common cold. And everybody has ideas about their little tricks for what you can do for a common cold. But we still have not found anything that cures the common cold. But something just came out in the news, that's something that we've probably all tried for a sore throat anyway. But a new study shows that zinc, taking that every day, over 75 milligrams, so that's about 10 of these zinc lozenges every day.
Just when you have a cold.
When you have the cold, yeah. That's a good to
take
clarify
it every day.
That.
It's too much if you take it every day. It
can shorten the duration of the cold.
Substantially. You're looking like 40%. And here's the clue that made the difference. There were about 13 studies that were done, and these people who looked at this looked at all 13 studies, and what they found is that people who had less than 75 milligrams a day intake when they had their cold in the form of a lozenger, okay, if they had less than that, it didn't do anything. But if they had more than that, it worked quite well. And you could use two forms. You could use either zinc acetate or zinc gluconate, and you get a nice result from it. Why people didn't think that the dose might matter when they did these original studies makes me wonder about the quality of our research industry. Because that's like a no-brainer. Of course the dose makes a difference. You take too little, you get no effect. You take the right amount, you get a nice effect. You take too much, it might kill you. Dose matters. And here we have 13 studies that when they went back and looked at the amount that was involved, it made all the difference in the world. So does zinc work? Yeah, it does. And should we be using it? Yes, because it's safe. It doesn't just relieve the sore throat. It also relieves the length of time that you have the cold. It relieves the stuffiness and the sore throat, and it shortens it. Okay, so it's worth doing. There are no side effects from it. If you don't like the taste, don't take it.
Yeah, well, you know, there are other things, too, that are good for a common cold.
A lot of things.
There's one thing that you and I have been practicing for a few years now that really works for us. And we can't really tell you to do it, but we can just inform you
that to discuss with your doctor, yes, your healthcare practitioner, because never do we give advice on this show about treatment for you. We are only providing information that you should consider with your healthcare practitioner before you decide whether or not you're going to use it, because I'm not your doctor.
So what we do is at the very beginning of a cold, at the first sign of a cold, we take 50 to 100,000 international units of vitamin D. Mm-hmm. You have to take it with, or we take it with food, and it can actually prevent the cold. Or if you start taking it after you've already got the symptoms for a day or something, what it does is it's like you kind of know you have a cold, but you don't feel bad, and you don't get stuffy.
You've got the sore throat, and you're starting to feel a little malaise. That's the time most people will take it, and that works really great. What does vitamin D do? How does it work? Well, it has a very interesting effect on the immune system. There are two kinds, at least, of immunity in the human body. One is to make antibodies, and the other is to make cells called immune cells that actually attack microbes and kill them. So the cells do the killing rather than the antibodies. Now, when you have a virus infection, the bulk of what defends against the virus are the cells. Vitamin D shifts the immune's preference from making antibodies to making the T cells, which are the ones that protect against viral infections and cancers. So taking a little bit of vitamin D, or a lot of vitamin D for a while, to get your levels back up to normal, because most of us have a very low level of vitamin D, just tells us that that's what we need to be able to have a healthy immune system. So that's why I recommend for my patients, depending on what their situation is, taking large doses of vitamin D.
And it really is amazing, but you don't want to do it for more than about 5 days maximum.
I'd say 4 or 5 days. You take that size dose of vitamin D for a long time, you're liable to get into trouble with lots of things like a heart attack or a kidney stone or a stroke or something of that sort. But to take it for 2 or 3 or 4 days, if there are no contraindications and your healthcare practitioner agrees, it's something to keep in mind as a great treatment.
And we also know that vitamin C is well known for helping a cold, especially if you could get it in an IV.
That's the best way. If you can give it intravenously, you can get much higher levels of vitamin C inside the body than when you take it by mouth. And, of course, if you take too much by mouth, it upsets the GI tract and it can give you diarrhea. So we've got something that we need to know about here that's a powerful way to help fight infections.
Another thing, too, is some extra vitamin A for a few days, too.
For a lot of people who are deficient in vitamin A, that's for sure. And when you look at third world countries and you look at the vitamin A deficiency that's all over the place, it's huge. And if you've got low levels of vitamin A, your immune system simply won't work. So for those people, vitamin A supplementation is a great idea.
And another thing is maitake mushrooms.
Another way to boost the immune system to be able to fight against cancers and other microbes that might be affecting your health. So,
and also, you know, just common sense, like getting enough rest, reducing your stress, getting enough sleep, drinking enough fluids, maybe taking a hot bath, using a humidifier or a neti pot for your nose if you've got a sore throat, some ginger tea with a little lemon and manuka honey in it. And sometimes if you have like a sinus infection that's bothering you and your face hurts or you have a headache, the photon stimulator is really helpful.
The infrared light's amazing. Now, as we go back to looking at zinc for one last time here, what does it do in terms of helping against the viral infection? Well, first, it has antirhinoviral activity, which means it suppresses the rhinovirus. And so that's something that it does. It also induces the production of a chemical called interferon, which is something that keeps viruses from being able to invade normal cells. And, of course, it's an immune booster. So all these things that we do that can shorten the course of a cold should be considered when we become sick. And then we can make decisions about which of them makes the most sense for us. And if we'll do that, we'll be doing safe medicine that's applied appropriately, that's natural and supports our immune system, and that's what we need. So we're at about time to take our station break. I want you to know you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number here is 888 888- 877-474-4888. So if you have a question about your health, give us a call. And we'll be back taking your calls after the station break. Welcome back to Prescriptions for Health. I am Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. If you'd like to join in our conversation, that's 874-4888.
You know, by the time our kids are teens, it's tempting to let everybody just fend for themselves or get takeout when it comes to dinner time.
Indeed.
But let's talk about why it really is important to eat dinner as a family, especially, it's nice to do it every night, but if you could do it at least three times a week, according to a recent study, it has tremendous benefits. It's not just about having family time together and connecting, but eating disorders are less likely, like 35% less. And parents can then recognize some of the early signs.
Well, see, the values that we have in our family make a big difference in terms of what's going to happen to our kids. And we get so busy with our personal lives and our activities, our jobs, our education, our hobbies, whatever it is that's important to us, that a lot of the time when kids figure that out, that they can go have a Big Mac or Burger King, or they go out with their friend or go have candy, whatever they want to do, and they do, there are consequences from that. But what they are is that's a reflection of the loss of family values. I know in my case particularly, it was a big deal. Because when I got married, I was a second-year medical student, and I had almost no time for my family because I was studying to become a doctor, and then we got into internship and residency years, and that was even worse, and that went on for almost 10 years. So by the time I met my kids, they were in the range of being 8, 9, or 10 years old. Not a good way to raise a family. And, of course, if you're not there, how are you going to pass along your values? And maybe some of that's good because you wouldn't want to pass those values along anyway. We get so driven about success and about achieving and competing that we become adversarial with one another. We forget about the family values that are what make this country what it was back in 1776 with the Declaration of Independence.
Well, sometimes it's not just the fault of the parent, like you were saying, you were so busy. Mm-hmm. But many times teenagers, they have a lot of activities and homework, and sometimes they have jobs or they're socializing, and maybe they've already, like you said, grabbed a burger or something before they came home. But one of the things that I was just thinking about that might be nice for families to do is to say, if you come home and you've already eaten and you're not hungry, you're still like,
you're going to be at the table with us because this is family time. It's a time we'll review what happened for the day. We bind together talking about what kinds of things are important in life, and we eat together. We're breaking bread together. Those are things that are all important family values that have been lost. And when we lose that, then we lose the control we have to teach our kids good eating habits, to learn about family values.
It heads off obesity and poor nutrition.
Absolutely. At least the food that you're cooking, you have control over. The food that you buy, you have very little control over, and most of the time don't even know what's in what you're eating.
I mean, when you go to a restaurant.
Yes, indeed. Yes. That's right.
But when you buy food, like at a health food store, you know what you're buying. Especially if you're buying fresh things that aren't processed. But anyway, one of the things that it's saying in this article is how important it is to plan ahead with your family and to make it a priority. And then there will be less unhealthy snacking also after dinner.
Right.
And not to make it a forced activity, to make it seem like it's something that's a nice thing to do.
It's a together thing. And there shouldn't be any cell phones or TV or texting or any of that stuff. It's family time. It's community time. It's a time when you're together and you're taking an interest in what happened to each member of the family through the day. It's a time to check in.
You know what else? Even just, it doesn't really take that long if the whole family chips in and helps to cook
exactly.
Or helps to clean up.
Sure.
And then it's not a big deal for anybody, because a lot of times I think parents don't want to spend the time doing it because it really does take a lot of time and it messes up the kitchen and all that.
Well, the family can participate
in that. But if everybody helps.
Sure. It's about teamwork, and we should be teaching that. It's about supporting one another. It's about being together and seeing what you can give to make the experience a better one. I know values have changed a lot. When I was a kid, back in the 40s. Oh, my God, back in the 40s. Mm-hmm. We had dinner every night together, and we didn't snack before dinner.
We didn't have fast food places in those days.
Not so much. That's right. We didn't. You're right. I remember a couple here and there that were around, but they were far enough away from home that when I was under 15, I couldn't get there because I didn't have a car. It makes a big difference when you're spending time with a family trying to do the right thing to teach your kids real values. And that's what happened when we grew up. We went to school. We usually played sports after school. So we got out at about 3 o'clock. Maybe we came home about 5:30 or 6 o'clock. And when we got home, we were interested in seeing what mom was doing in the kitchen. We could smell that bread baking in the oven and all the good things that we were going to have for dinner. By the time it was time to eat, we were famished. We all cleaned our plates and we talked. We had conversations about what happened through the day.
Because, you know, a lot of times when parents are working, they don't have much time to spend with their kids. And dinner time is a valuable time. I mean, otherwise, when are they going to visit with them? The kid goes in their room and they start doing their homework or getting on their computer and visiting with their friends or something, and they're not too interested in spending time with family. So family values are so important, and that's one place that – you know, that's really important to do it is with your meals.
Well, I think things have changed a lot from the days when we grew up. The values are different. I mean, we're in such a fast-paced world now. A lot of parents, both of them are working, and they're coming home late. There may not be a babysitter or somebody to prepare dinner or get things started. And so the tendency is, well, let's get some fast food or something like that and see if we can at least get this thing over with rather than enjoy the process. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and it's time for Vicki's last 2020 tip.
Well, I have a version of Dr. Seuss for 2011. I do not like this Uncle Sam. I do not like this healthcare scam. I do not like these dirty crooks or how they lie and cook the books. I do not like when Congress steals. I do not like their secret deals. I do not like ex-Speaker Nan. I do not like this Yes We Can. I do not like this spending spree. I'm smart. I know that nothing's free. I do not like their smug replies when I complain about their lies. I do not like this kind of hope. I do not like it. Nope, nope, nope.
Indeed.
Thank you, Lisa.
Well, you know, you just said a whole mouthful there. And once you understand that that's what's happening, it really makes it clear that we have to start doing things that are different at the grassroots level, because it ain't coming from the top down in any form that we want. So it's got to be built from the bottom up. That means you. So you got to take some responsibility for changing things so that things can change.
So the pill, also known as birth control pills, they've been around since the 60s. And at that time, they were really strong, and they made women feel like they were pregnant and they were experiencing lots of unwanted side effects. But over the years, the dosage was reduced, and yet there are still effects that are not healthy. So let's talk about what some of the benefits and the complications are.
All right. So what we're looking at is some good things that it does that helps us feel better, keeping in mind that we're putting artificial things into our body that have an effect on us that has a lot of negative things as well. But some of the good things, of course, is birth control. It works very well. It's almost 100% effective. It works to make cramps during your periods or before your periods less of a problem. It lowers the number of infections of the uterus and ovary that can happen. It helps to control the cysts in the ovary or the breast. It helps reduce the risk for ovarian and uterine cancer. And, of course, it can help treat acne. So those are reasons why you might want to consider using the pill. But they come at a price.
Yeah, and now they've found that it can actually lower bone density and increase triglycerides, which are the fat that's in your blood.
Mm-hmm. And it can increase the risk of breast cancer, particularly in women before they're pregnant, which is what most women who are on the pill are using. And that's a 44% increase in the risk of breast cancer.
Well, the World Health Organization classifies it as a number one carcinogen.
So it's proven to cause human cancer is what that means. It also causes blood clots, strokes, heart attacks, hypertension, gallbladder disease, headaches. I mean, hello. There's a few things here.
Yeast infection?
Yeah, that you pay for if you're going to wind up using a pill. Now, getting back to the bone density stuff, there was a study that was done that looked at women who were using the pill and then looking to see what kind of effect that had in reducing or increasing bone density. And what they found is that after taking the birth control pills for 2 years, there was a dose-related increase in osteoporosis, in bone loss. And it was as much as 1 or 2% over just a couple of years.
Wow! So these young women are getting osteoporosis younger.
Well, they're not yet getting osteoporosis, but they should be building bone at a time when they're losing bone. So that's a double whammy. Instead of gaining 1 or 2%, you're losing 1 or 2%. So you're looking at a 3 or 4% change here that has a big impact on bone density in later life, particularly after the menopause. So if you don't have a big bone base to start with, a good dense bone to start with, you're going to be at a higher risk, a much higher risk, okay, of having a problem with osteoporosis. And that's what this article talked about.
Well, another thing, too, is that if you're not married and you're using a birth control pill, you still have to be careful of sexually transmitted diseases.
Well, there's nothing to protect against that.
Yeah.
And maybe the best approach is I would say would be an IUD. Because, you know, they got a bad rap about 30 years ago. They were associated with what were called infected abortions, meaning that if you had an IUD in place, your risk for having an infection and loss of the pregnancy was slightly higher. And so there were a lot of lawsuits, and the company making the Lippi's Loop, which is what it was called at that time, decided no longer to make it because they were losing money with the lawsuits. But as we're looking back over that data, It was a bad run of information that came in. And for the most part, this is probably the safest thing to do, but you have to use your common sense about when to put one in and when not to. If somebody has recurrent infections from pelvic inflammatory disease, from, you know, sexually transmitted diseases, an IUD is not a good choice. But in somebody who doesn't have that problem, who doesn't want to get pregnant, that doesn't want to take all the side effects and complications that come from the birth control pill, here's something to think about.
Well, there's another thing, too, is abstinence.
Well, yeah, you do that one, dear.
Also, you know, there are certain drugs that can reduce effectiveness of birth control pills, and people need to be aware of that if they're taking birth control pills, because if they are taking epileptic drugs or drugs for tuberculosis or taking antibiotics or taking an herb like St. John's wort, those can all reduce the effectiveness of birth control pills.
Listen, anytime you're putting something artificial in your body that has never been in the human body until we made it, you're running the risk of upsetting the biochemistry and physiology of the body in major ways. And our biochemistry and physiology is so complex that nobody has got a clue how that actually works. Even though we know a ton of information about cell biochemistry and physiology, it's nothing compared to look at the big picture. Think of how we know almost nothing about the biophysics of how a cell works, about how electromagnetic fields and things of that sort influence how the body works. We have almost no knowledge. So with our limited amount of knowledge, we're coming out with lots of drugs to be used for a variety of conditions, and most of the time we don't know what we're doing, and it may take 30, 40, or 50 years before we find out it was really a dumb idea, even though it seemed good at the time. For example, the pill Darvon, which is a pain reliever, came out in the 60s. It was removed in the year 2010. My
wow.
God,
50 plus years
later, it was taken off the market because it was found to cause cardiac rhythm disturbances and some increases in death. Wow, only 50 years to figure it out. And think of what happens if you're taking 4 or 5 drugs or more. What do you think they're doing? Nobody's got a clue. You have to pay attention to those direct-to-consumer ads that are telling you, yep, you can have seizures and heart attacks and strokes and diabetes.
Don't just tune out, and that's when you go in the other room.
Right, because, you know, most of us get desperate enough that we don't want our symptoms. And so what we do is we have this selective hearing. We'll hear what we want to hear, and then when it gets to the part that the problem, we'll say, oh, I'll be okay. The FDA has protected me. I don't have to worry. Big Pharma wouldn't do anything like that. Well, guess again. Go see Gary Null's film, Death by Medicine, if you want to get some kind of clue of how dangerous this is for the people of the world. Lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
That's 874-4888. We often think of sugar increasing the risk of diabetes, but not heart disease. Tell us about the study showing that high fructose corn syrup causing an increase in cholesterol and triglycerides and the increase of a protein that leads to plaques that cause vascular disease.
Yeah, see, when you start doing things to Mother Nature, like separating the fructose from the fruit or separating the high fructose corn syrup from the corn, that there may be a price that you pay for it, even though you can't figure it out because you're not Mother Nature. Mother Nature's got it worked out, and she's playing a little game with us because of what we're doing. Saying, okay, Mr. Smart Guy, you want to try these things? I'll teach you about it, but you're going to pay for it because there are going to be problems from it. And what they found when they did this study is that if they allowed people to consume 25% of their total calories in the form of fructose or high fructose corn syrup, that the risk for developing high LDL cholesterol, high triglycerides, and apolipoprotein B, which is a risk factor for heart disease, all got worse. Then you have to go back and look at what's being recommended by various government agencies. When you look at the American Heart Association, they say only 5% of calories should come from things that are added sweets. But when you look at the Dietary Guidelines for Americans 2010, they suggest the upper limit is 25% of the total daily calories. Now, I wonder who's funding them and what conflicts of interest they have, because both of those numbers are ridiculous. You don't want to be taking in something that's not healthy for you. Sugar is a poison. Sugar is a poison. It's not good for you. In small amounts, you can deal with the poison. It's like you can take small amounts of arsenic in, and it's just fine. Okay? But if you take a lot of it, you're going to have trouble. And that's the problem. All right. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. The number here is 888-874-4888. And it looks like we have a call from Lois. Hi, Lois. Are you there?
I'm here.
So how are you?
I have a question that's unrelated to anything you've been discussing today.
All right, go for it.
Well, I'm dealing with loose stools for over a year and a very enlarged abdomen and now inflammation above my collarbones.
Above your collarbones? What do you mean inflammation?
Well, it's
what do you notice?
Like pillows sitting
on. Is there some swelling there?
What?
Is it swollen above your collarbones, or what do you notice there? Is it red, the skin red? Is it tender? What makes you think it's inflamed?
It's just puffiness.
It's puffiness, okay. Are you puffy in your feet as well?
No, nowhere else.
Okay. So it's mostly loose stools and your abdomen is distended, it sounds like.
Have you been to your doctor?
Yes.
And what did the doctor suggest?
Well, last thing was ultrasound on those pillows. And that came out no problem.
Okay, that's good, because he was probably looking for an ovarian cancer. Sometimes that's how it presents, so that was good thinking on his part. And how about the actual treatment of the problem? Did he have any suggestions for that?
Not really.
Okay, let me tell you what I would consider doing. You got a pencil and paper?
I do.
Good. I would do a comprehensive digestive stool analysis. It's called a CDSA. And there are lots of laboratories that can do that test. Among them is Great Smoky's Lab or Doctor's Data and a number of others that do a good job on it. Diagnostics is another one. That will give you some kind of idea of how the ecosystem in the intestinal tract is balanced, because there are at least 1,000 different species of microbes there that when they get out of balance can cause things like this. There's a book I would suggest you buy. It's under $30. It's called Optimal Digestive Health. It was written by Trent Nichols, who is a gastroenterologist, And he has 55 contributing authors to that. I wrote 5 of the chapters in that book. And it has, if you just look at the ones I wrote, you'll get some kind of idea of the kinds of things that you can do for these kinds of symptoms. And to summarize some of that for you, in general, what I do after I'm convinced that there's not something more serious going on in the intestinal tract, and that still needs to be done, I start with a probiotic, which is a concoction of the microbes that live in the gut that you want there, the Acidophilus and Bifidobacter and Lactobacillus, the good friendly guys that will crowd out the bad guys and do a lot of good things for you. So I would take a probiotic. Second, I would add L-glutamine to that, which is an amino acid that's a major metabolic fuel of the intestinal tract. And that is something that will help to allow the gut to heal itself. And it works beautifully to support it. Third, I would add something called Ultra Clear Sustain, and there are other brands like it. It happens to be the Metagenics product that Jeff Bland produces, and I think is a very good one that you could try in addition. So those three things have a very good chance of solving the problem that you're having with the loose stools and the bloating and whatever else you may have from that problem.
And if you want to learn any more about this, we have a lot.
Well, go to our website.
A lot of this information on our website, drsaputo.com, yeah. S-A-P-U-T-O.
Yeah, do that. There's a lot of free information. And in the search box, put irritable bowel syndrome, which is what it sounds like what you might have, and you'll get a lot of audios and videos because all of our material is done in audio and video. And if you become a member, you can take a survey on irritable bowel syndrome, and it will talk about each aspect of what goes wrong in IBS and what you can do about it. And my guess is within about 2 weeks, if that's what your problem is, this will be a thing of the past. If it's not, call us back on the show and say, you said, and I'm not better. Okay, Lois?
Could I ask you one more thing?
You bet.
Would it have anything to do with any stones?
You mean kidney stones?
Yes, or gallstones.
Gallstones it could, and doing a gallbladder sonogram isn't a bad idea. It's not going to be kidney stones. Those are painful, and they usually don't cause these kinds of symptoms alone. There'll be other things as well. So my guess is it's probably IBS, but I'm not your doctor. I'm not giving you medical advice. What I'm giving you is information to think about that may help you and your doctor decide what the next steps are. So I would encourage you to go to my website at drsaputo.com. Put in irritable bowel syndrome in the search box and see the wealth of information. You'll probably get 50 different audios and videos on there talking about just that topic. And when you're done with that, you'll know a lot about it. You may be able to educate your doctor some. Okay,
wow.
Lois?
I'm going to be busy.
You're going to be busy. Let us know how it works.
Take
Thanks
care.
For calling.
Thank you very much, and I enjoyed the show.
Well, thank you so much. Tell your friends. Okay, bye-bye. The lines are open. I'm Dr. Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888.
We all know that sleep is important, but it's often neglected because we put other things first, like staying up late to watch TV or working on the Internet or reading a book or even cleaning the house or doing homework and so on and so forth.
We're just busy, aren't we? Busy.
We know that insomnia can mess with our hormones, and it can increase our appetite, and it can increase the risk of diabetes and just poor health in general. But tell us about this study that was in the Journal of the American Medical Association showing that young men that get less than 5 hours sleep a night in a week significantly lower their levels of testosterone, and what the negative consequences of low testosterone, you know, for
See, it's a big deal. When you start looking at hormones like this, they have extremely powerful effects. And what they found was if you got less than 5 hours of sleep a night for 1 week, that your testosterone levels would drop 15%, which is an amazing amount. See, testosterone isn't just about sexual prowess and secondary sexual characteristics. It's also about building muscle strength and muscle mass
and
bone density. And it's also about making sure that your heart works right. I mean, a lot of men who have low testosterone syndrome will be at a higher risk for heart attacks and strokes.
And what about osteoporosis in men?
Absolutely, in men or women. And another study that was done looked at what happens in men and women and how testosterone protects against inflammation. So if you have low levels of testosterone, you're going to be at a higher risk for developing inflammation and a lot of the chronic diseases that we see, the heart attacks, the strokes, the diabetes, all the other things that are that we're talking about. And they have looked at some of the biochemical mechanisms that explain that and have found it. So we know why women are at a higher risk for inflammatory diseases than men are. And it's because they have less of an enzyme called phospholipase D. It's less active. So testosterone is a very important hormone for our bodies. It does a lot of things that we talked about. But what we often don't know is it protects against the inflammatory process. So this whole thing that we call inflammation is something that is widespread. It's ubiquitous. And we all have it because we are exposed to a lot of factors that promote inflammation. We eat bad diets. We weigh too much. We don't get enough sleep, like we just mentioned. We've got too much stress. We don't have a meaningful purpose in our life, and we worry too much. If we deal with lifestyle, we don't have to get complicated in our biochemistry and physiology. We don't have to become cellular biochemists. We don't have to turn to big pharma or the technology industry.
And we're always looking for anti-aging techniques.
Well, the best anti-aging technique there is what? A healthy lifestyle, and in particular, exercise. There is nothing that works as an anti-aging strategy anywhere near as effectively as exercise. It's an anti-aging process.
Well, and getting enough sleep, all of it.
Well, all of them are important.
Eating a healthy diet.
I was just picking out the one that is usually the most dramatic and one that we can do something about all those lifestyle factors. So you have a good point there. I think we need to pay attention to our lifestyle first and then look at technologies and drugs afterwards if we need to. But lifestyles first, non-invasive technologies are next, supplements and herbs follow that, then we look at drugs and technologies, and lastly we look at surgery. And if we will do all those things, the chances of our getting sick, particularly if we clean up our environment on top of that, will be remote. So it's important to know, and I want to remind you, that we'll be back live to talk about what's new in the news in health and take care of your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.com radio and at drsaputo.com from 12 to 1 Pacific Standard Time and 3 to 4 Eastern Standard Time. They're also archived, as all of our shows are, on drsaputo.com.
So remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a great week.